Hey friends, welcome to Conversations with Kenzie, a podcast hosted by yours truly, Kenzie Brenna. No topic goes unturned here. We talk about everything with everyone. We like to get raw, and sometimes we get heavy, and sometimes we swear. So I'm warning you now. Also, we are working remotely, so audio quality between host and guest may differ. Lastly, check out our show notes for giveaways, fun promotions, or discounts to our favorite stuff. Enjoy the show. Hello, lovely people. Welcome to today's episode. It's going to be all about trigger warnings. I know this is a spicy subject, and I'm so excited to get into it today because this has been a topic that I wanted to talk about for so long, but that I didn't really have the courage to talk about. But we have mustered up the confidence and courage, my friends. Also, before we start, while you're listening to my voice and my newly developed lisp due to my Invisalign, please head over to Apple Podcasts. If you have it, rate and review 5 stars. If the show has ever given you any value, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. And when you share it through your stories and tag me, I do like to pick out random users and community members to give them little thank yous. So please keep that in mind. So trigger warnings, we're going into this today. And to start off, we are actually going to begin with a comment that I got from someone who is a lovely community member and a really lovely person who decided to unfollow after I posted up a picture last week or 2 weeks ago now of my left arm holding a bunch of flowers. And in the pictures, the photos were talking about how people can change. And for those of you who don't know, my left arm has self-harm scars on it. And I knew that this post was going to upset some people. And I did choose to post it anyway without trigger warnings. So this person says to me, "Unpopular opinion here, but I think trigger warnings should actually be put on scars or when mentioning self-harm in general. I say this as I am almost in tears and on the verge of an anxiety attack. Then to read comments and be told to self-regulate was a jab at my heart. I felt invalid because anyone that has been through something like this knows how harmful it can be. I don't follow people who show this content because it's triggering for me, and to be told to self-regulate felt like someone telling me to get over myself. You have a right to your story, but I have a right to filter what I am subjected to as well. I understand your boundary, but unfortunately, I'm going to walk away from this account to protect my own emotional boundaries as much as I love your account." So this was like, I think this was like a really beautiful comment. I'm like really glad that that person stepped away and did what they had to do in order to feel better and in order to have curate their space to be a space that they love and a space that they feel good in. So with that comment in mind, we're going to come back to it at the end of the episode today, and we're going to first discuss what a trigger warning is. I guess I should give you a synopsis of what today's episode will include. We're going to discuss what trigger warnings are. We're going to discuss whether or not they have efficacy, whether or not they work. We're going to discuss other ways that we can talk about being triggered and where this word came from. We are going to discuss whether or not I use them on my page. I'm sure you can already guess the answer to that. And ways that we can move forward from this and all be empowered. So what is a trigger warning? A trigger warning is a statement made prior to sharing potentially disturbing content. So you might see TW or CW, which stands for content warning. Basically, it's like saying danger ahead, proceed at your own risk, similar to a road sign or a construction sign. And it seems pretty harmless, right? You know, well, we're going to dive into that a little bit more and really explore whether these things we see online are helpful or harmful, or maybe, of course, a mix of both. You know, on this podcast, we love a both and not an either or. If you've been following me for a while, you definitely know I love a both and. So some people have gone through traumatic events that leave deep psychological scars. And sometimes this pain is actually dormant for quite a while, it could be months to years. And then later something they see or hear or smell or experience renews this emotional pain or unwanted memories. And so there is a big effort to spare survivors reminders of past trauma. And some institutions and individuals provide these trigger warnings to alert us that an upcoming program or text or video or content may contain unsettling images or may contain unsettling information. So that way a person can skip over and opt out if they don't want to go through emotional pain. And on paper, this sounds amazing. I mean, I want to avoid emotional pain as much as possible. So what could be the harm in trigger warnings? The first thing that I want to talk about is that they don't work. And this is coming from an anecdotal place. So my own experience where I've seen my friends ignore trigger warnings that are directly related to them. I have this one friend and we got together in New York and they were reading this new book. And I was so excited. I was like, how is this new book? I really want to read it. And they were like, it's so good. And there's like tons of trigger warnings in it. And of course, those were the first parts that I read. And I was like so surprised. And it made me think to bring this up to my other friends to ask them if they ever abide by trigger warnings, if they ever use them correctly. And they all said no. They always read, look, do whatever they got to do. They don't ever skip or do anything like that. And so far, the findings in psychology also say that they do not work as intended. In fact, they may even cause more harm. Peyton Jones, a researcher at Harvard University and lead author on a study, said, specifically, we found trigger warnings did not help trauma survivors brace themselves to face potentially upsetting content. In some cases, it actually made things worse. Now, when I first read this, I was actually surprised. Like, how could trigger warnings make things worse when they are meant to keep us safe? You know, like, aren't they similar to like a proverbial seatbelt? But the researchers discovered that trigger warnings seem to increase the extent to which people see trauma as a central part of their identity, which can worsen the impact of PTSD in the long run. And this is wild to me, and we will come back to this in a few moments, but I had no idea that identifying with your trauma could actually make the impacts of these things so much worse. Jones and his colleagues conducted a randomized experiment amongst two groups of people who had experienced serious trauma in the past. 451 people were selected. Both groups read a series of literature passages. One group received trigger warnings prior to distressing passages, while the other did not. Participants rated their emotions after reading each passage and also completed a series of questionnaires at the end. Overall, the researchers found little statistical differences in the reactions of both groups. Neither seemed to be spared the emotional impact of reading the text. Whether trigger warnings are explicitly harmful was less clear, though Jones and his colleagues did find evidence that trigger warnings increase the belief that their trauma is an essential part of the survivor's life story, which research has shown to prove that it is counter-therapeutic. The primary outcome of this particular study was the level of anxiety. So that's what they were measuring, like the increased anxiety in an individual. And other studies have measured whether or not people who see trigger warnings actually use them to avoid material. And these studies show somewhat conflicting results. However, there is room to discuss that if people do indeed avoid material based on trigger warnings, that it might not be the best idea because there is tons of evidence to show that avoidance is one of the core components of the CBT model of PTSD, and it actually exacerbates symptoms over time. So for people who have serious anxiety disorders, the only way out might be through. And I know that sounds really counteractive to all of the safe and cushy places that we're trying to create, particularly online, but it is integral to healing. A study was done to show that avoidance is not fantastic for emotional healing, and goes on to say that suppression and avoidance of emotional triggers suggest that emotional avoidance and thought suppression may not only hinder the learning process, but also maintain anxious responding, which means that through avoidance and suppression, you're going to be having the same anxious responses over and over again. Not only that, but avoidance and suppression actually paradoxically heightens your anxious responses to threatening cues and will interfere with emotional functionality, thereby further impeding adaptive responding. So all of that to say, I know that that was a lot, but the more that we avoid and suppress certain negative thoughts, the more that we're actually furthering the harm that we do to ourselves. It's like avoiding and suppressing those things actually makes them more powerful. And coming back to the identity part of trauma, seeing trauma as central to one's life is also known as narrative centrality, and it's correlated with more severe levels of PTSD. It also mediates treatment outcomes, meaning that those who have decreases in narrative centrality in treatment tend to experience more complete recoveries. So again, I know that this was a lot. But to recap, research shows that these warnings don't actually work, and in fact, at times can be more harmful. And just when it comes to the narrative centrality, that really resonates with me when I was like in the thick of my eating disorder. I actually have diaries to support this. But I used to say, like, who am I without my eating disorder? I'm nobody. My eating disorder consumes me. My eating disorder is my everything. And that's how it used to feel. And so when I was in therapy or a therapist tried to get close to me through recovery, I wouldn't trust them. And I would also tell them, like, I'm not going to be nobody without this. And so I personally, this is, again, my own experience, the narrative centrality thing is something that I've really had to work on in the last few years, like constantly telling myself that I am not my trauma. I am not my disorder. I am not my mental illness. I am not my mental health. Like, I'm so much more than those things. So moving on, I want to open up the discussion to see if we can actually parse through some of this language. So the word trigger actually came from the PTSD community. And it was served as a word to let people who were going through treatment know that there was going to be an upcoming disturbance. Now, a person who has PTSD who is triggered is going to be much different than a person who is scrolling online who might be angry or upset at something that they see, read, or watch. When a person who has PTSD becomes triggered, in the classical sense of the word, the way that it was used to describe was someone who was having a serious flashback, people who sweat profusely, people who may soil themselves and lose control of that. They may get dizzy and almost faint or completely faint. They might black out. They might deeply disassociate. It's very, very serious. And I do feel like this word has now been co-opted to mean something that it wasn't meant to mean. So I want to discuss the difference between being triggered, being activated, and being uncomfortable. And this is my little pyramid of the ways that we can go about feeling things that might be negative. I think that the distinction is incredibly important and going to be useful for all of us identifying certain emotional states that we might be in, which will then allow us to gather information about what we will need when we are in one of those states. And this is totally my own philosophical theorizing. It's not substantiated in clinical research. And this is just my own way of figuring out how we can have better mental health practices that help us upregulate our own nervous systems and also allow us to create better social and cultural norms that don't actually hinder us. So let's talk about what it means to be uncomfortable. So when I'm uncomfortable, I feel agitated. It feels almost sticky, like a situation or what someone has said to me is like kind of like under my skin and like sticking to me. I recently watched a Joe Rogan bit with him and Andrew Schultz, and they were like harping on fat women or fat models. And I got super uncomfortable watching it because I just wanted so badly to debate them. I wanted so badly to fight them, to verbally, of course. I didn't like it. I wanted it to go away. I wanted to have this confrontation. But I went to bed that night a little bit pissed, but it didn't like ruin my day. I was just feeling hot from watching it and feeling a little bit riled up. being uncomfortable is definitely manageable. It might irritate me. It might piss me off. Maybe it even makes me like a little bit sad. There might be a little bit of pain there, but it's manageable. The next concept is being activated, which I think is probably one of the terms that I use when I'm crying or when something has made me so mad or nervous, I can start to feel my heartbeat in my throat and I can start to feel my breath get shallow. And it's happening now because sense memory is definitely super real. Actually, I don't even know if that applies to this, but I can remember certain situations that activate my nervous system like this, and immediately I can begin to feel it. And so I leave my parasympathetic nervous system state, which is the calm relaxation state, and I enter into fight or flight. So my breath gets shallow, my heart rate goes up. I can almost feel myself thinking less critically, like I either just want confrontation or I just want to completely escape. And I might even feel immobilized, which I think kind of falls under the flight. I just think that you just at that point want to escape and you're just escaping through being immobilized. So in this activated state, I would say that I come into the state most often when I'm told that I'm a bad person online. Like let's say I don't use trigger warnings and somebody says that I'm a bad person and that I'm actually a suicide risk. I'm a risk for people who are suicidal. That can definitely put me into an activated state. Recently, I stood up and said, I will not be part of the cancellation of Taylor Nolan and that I support Taylor Nolan's growth and I support her as a human being. And I was literally told to go kill myself when I said that. And of course, I have the screenshots to prove that, but I would say I felt very activated reading that. And I was ready to either fight, you know, so confront, attack, defend, aggress, or I was ready to flee. I imagine deleting my profile, throwing my phone into the ocean, deleting my posts, all of the ways to help me escape. And being activated is very hard to get out of, but it is possible. You need specific tools that will help you regulate and help you calm down from it. For me, that might include putting my phone away, putting it on silent, sitting with my breath, you know, like squeezing my core, doing anything that will help open up my parasympathetic nervous system again and make me feel grounded. What you do to regulate yourself will be different or maybe different than what I will do, which is beautiful and can be hard to understand. And now we get into the word triggered. So this would be like the top of the pyramid. And this is a place where I call it's almost the point of no return or it is the point of no return. And this is where the body is fully submerged in it. And the only way out is through. So a person may lose control of bodily functions. A person may black out, sweat profusely, have a flashback, become almost catatonic from disassociating, have a hard time regulating on their own without social or medical intervention. This state is extremely exhausting and can have severe effects days later on this person who's going through this thing. Think about someone who has PTSD from combat and the 4th of July happens, or someone who's gone through sexual assault and then sees the person who was assaulted or hears their voice or goes through something that puts them back into that state in some way. So with that being said, you can see that the term triggered really only applies to a small fraction of the population. And most of the time when we say we're triggered online, it's coming from a place of being activated or being uncomfortable. And of course, there will be people who have been triggered online. There's always going to be a case or an outlier, but I would say most of the time we are not triggered. We are co-opting a word that belongs to the PTSD community, and we are taking a word and making it central to an experience that can actually be ascribed with other language. I do think that these things are important. And of course, as I'm reading this, I hear all of the debates happening in my head. You know, I hear someone saying, you know, I am not allowed to make a judgment call on whether or not someone's activated or triggered, which is absolutely true. I do think that this conversation is important and incredibly nuanced, and I don't have all of the answers here. You know, I never claim to have them. I'm not entirely right either. We're all a mixture of wrongness and rightness. When it particularly comes to my page, I don't think I've ever used a trigger warning in the last few years, if ever. I'm sure I have at one point. If they're ever used on anything, I think that they should be reserved for gore, violence, or going into graphic detail of rape or sexual assault. I think that if a person is going to be activated due to hearing about someone's eating disorder or someone talking about BMI, or me showing my scars or someone talking about anxiety or depression, then they are actually in a state of being able to regulate. And let's say they've had like a really tough day or a tough couple of days and they're so activated that they really feel out of control. You know, these things happen. We go online after a really stressful day and everything pisses us off. Everything activates us. And if we are looking at the research once again, even if that person were to go online and to see stuff, the trigger warnings wouldn't actually be helpful. And so I remember having this conversation with somebody who used to be in my life, and they were saying like, who cares if trigger warnings work or don't work? Just use them because it's important. It lets people know you're being thoughtful. And maybe other people might think that they work, even if they don't, who cares? But to me, that's not integral. That's like, that doesn't have a lot of integrity. That doesn't have a lot of value to it. That is the literal definition of virtue signaling. Like, I am just doing this thing to signal to you that we have the same virtues. I am just signaling to other people that I am part of this community and part of this village. And I don't think that that's actually right. I think that that's incredibly superficial. And I think that we are better than that and that it's okay to grow from these things. And I totally understand that it feels dismissive when we tell people to just regulate. And I really want to honor that. You know, it's not a nice feeling to feel dismissed. It's the opposite of validation and empathy. And I really do want to honor that. I'm going to work on figuring out ways that I can talk that might feel less dismissive to some people. I love being able to validate people. And I also realize that I am not your source of validation. You have to be the source of validation. And so this comment that I got when I told people to self-regulate and it felt like dismissal, I really do want to sit in that and honor it and figure out ways that I could, you know, maybe say things a little bit better. When we open up Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, we are consenting to seeing stories or ideas or concepts that we have chosen to follow. But we've also consented to these apps suggesting content to us through their algorithms. We've chosen and consented to these apps taking our information as they please. We're consenting to being part of different worlds online. It's a choice. We are choosing to be online. And when you choose to follow me or other influencers or anyone really, you are essentially stepping into our digitally curated homes and you are the guest. And we have many conversations on things. There will be things that you don't love about my home. There will be things that you freaking hate and that you would do totally different. And then there are things that you will love that you will want to be a part of. And at any point, you are free to leave because you are the one that has chosen to enter into my space. And this might feel like, well, how am I responsible if I thought you were safe, but you actually made me upset or activated? This is actually a comment that I got. Someone said that I thought that you were safe and you were home, but you aren't, you're unsafe. So this is an area that I think that we can talk about where I have responsibility to put out content that I think has integrity, that is aligned with my heart and aligned with my values and aligned with my ethics, things that I think are important. And I also have a responsibility to think about how those things are going to affect other people. So I do have responsibility here. I could have chosen to not put up that picture of my self-harm scars, but it wouldn't have felt like I was living to my values or to my integrity. Now, as a user and consumer of social media, it is your job, also my job and our job, to have a sense of responsibility of what we are looking at. And if we get into that space of being activated, to grab our tool belt and give ourselves what we need. This isn't meant to be cold or dismissive. This is something as adults we need to learn how to do. And trigger warnings are not going to regulate ourselves for us. We have to go inward and figure out what's going on. And of course, if that means unfollowing or leaving someone's page because we don't understand them, then that's okay. We're allowed to do that. We're allowed to express boundaries when we need to express them. There is so much freedom in this. I used to be able to think that I could save everyone. I would give my number out to people who were suicidal. I would meet up with people and try to help them or save them. And it wasn't until I went through something that I realized that we are our own saviors, that we have agency, that we cultivate our self-awareness to be able to make decisions. And if you have enough time and enough self-awareness and enough volition to send me a message about how triggering I am to you and what you think of these things, then I believe that you have enough time and self-awareness to regulate yourself and step away from content that is making you feel heated. I would also say when people message me those things, that it is actually furthering the activation of their nervous system and that it is furthering their fight or flight response system. And that when they are choosing to message me these things, it is choosing to fight. It's choosing to confront. Maybe not always, but definitely sometimes. It's a fight for validation. It's a fight for power because maybe we're seeing something that makes us feel disempowered. And we are seeking this externally because we are hardwired for tribal dynamics and we are hardwired for community. Though that doesn't mean that we cannot source these things from ourselves first and foremost. We are, and well, we could be our biggest champions. We could be the ones that we turn to first before we turn to other people to validate us and empower us. We are our own self-regulators. We are our own students. We have the ability to learn from things that activate us, to get curious, to start to understand what uniquely impacts us, and also what uniquely soothes us, calms us, puts us into a state of being able to think differently about things. I know that this was a lot, but I generally don't think that trigger warnings are very useful. And I generally don't think that our communities are very open to listening to these perspectives because we are trying to create the safest space as possible while maybe not practicing true safety. And so these things are really important to continue to talk about because of that. And I really hope that you learned something from this, and I really hope that you gathered something. I would love to hear your thoughts as usual. You mean a lot. Even if you disagree with me, you freaking mean a lot, and your perspective is valid, and your life is valid, all that stuff, just showering all validation. So sending you love wherever you are in the world, and I will see you next time on Conversations with Kenzie.
All right, friends, you made it to the end of the episode. You know what to do now. Head over to our Instagram account, Conversations with Kenzie, and let us know what you loved about the episode. Or let us know what you didn't love. What questions did we miss? What questions could we have asked differently? Let us know there. As always, stay curious, keep asking questions, and keep making conversations in your everyday life. Until next time.